Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi. Menachos Daf Samach Zayin. We begin right on top. Gilgul Hekdesh Poter. So we continue where we left off yesterday. Suppose there was some dough in the possession of Hekdesh, and the Gilgul, the making of the dough itself, occurred under Hekdesh's ownership. Poter, that exempts the material from the chiyuv of separating challah, because it was not privately owned, it was not Ari Soiseichem, as we're going to see later. It needs to be privately owned, as opposed to something which was owned by Hekdesh. So that's exempt, there's no question about that. There's none, as we learn in the Mishnah. Hekdesha Yisasa, so the woman had this dough, and she passed it on to Hekdesh before it was actually, you know, kneaded into dough. Ashulay Gilgal. Upta Asa, then she turned around and she redeemed it. She paid off the value and took it right back. And then processed the material into dough. So the Gilgal, the making of dough, occurred under her ownership. Chayeves, and she's Chayev and Chala. There's no reason to exempt it. Mishal Gilgal, Upta Asa Chayeves. Likewise, suppose she passed it on to Hekdesh after the Gilgal already took place under her possession. So she made a dough, donated it, and then Upta Asa redeemed that same material. Chayeves, once again, there's a Chiv of Chala, because the Gilgal step occurred while in her hands. However, Higdisha actually Gilgal. Suppose she gave it over to Hekdesh before Gilgal took place. It was simply in its raw material state. The Gilgal HaGizbar, and the Gizbar, the caretaker, he processed it into dough, and then she came back and took it back. V'chakach Pdei Asa, then she redeemed it and took it back. In this case, in fact, it's Pturah, because the trigger point for the Chiv of Chala is the Gilgal, and at that point it was in the hands of Hekdesh. Shebash as choyva saw, because at the moment which would trigger the Chiv, meaning the moment of Gilgal, the moment of turning into dough, hoysa Pturah, at that point it was exempt. Okay, so that's the conclusion. There's no question. The dough of Hekdesh is exempt from challah. Boy, Rava says, Rava, I have a question. What about if a guy makes a dough? A gilgal oved kichav. My. So the Yisrael now has this dough, which was manufactured by a guy. What's its status? You see, Mishnah Tnan. We do have a Mishnah as follows, which seems to say that, in fact, the Gilgal of a Goy exempts. He says, Gersh and his Gairs, a very similar halacha to the previous one regarding Hekdesh. So, a fellow became a Ger, Voisela Isa, and he has in his possession a dough. Okay? So, it depends when it was made. Na says, Achaloy and his Gair, Potter. It was done before he became a Yid. So, it was technically in the hands of a Goy at that point. Then, of course, it's Potter from Chal. On the other hand, Mishin is Geir. If he only made it now after converting, Chayv, of course, it's Chayv and Chal. Safek, we're not sure when it happened. Perhaps he had asked a friend to do it for him, and you can't really determine the exact, you know, moment, the timing. So then, we apply the halacha of Safek Doi Raisa L'Chumra. When there's a doubt in terms of a Torah obligation, we have to go to the strict side of things. And it's Chayv and Chal. So clearly, according to this Mishnah, the Gilgal of a Goy exempts. But the question is further, Ha man ketani la, who's the author? Who's the one that holds this position? Divrei HaKoyli, all agree to this point? V'afilu Rabbi Meir, v'Rabbi Yehuda, t'kemachav yehasam. See, yesterday we had a machloikis regarding grain of a Goy. Does it exempt that grain from Maaser? If the Goy made the miruach, he turned it into grain. So, according to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda yesterday, that grain is chayv and maser, despite being owned by a goy. And then we had Rabbi Yesi and Rabbi Shimon, who disagree. They say that we have a pasuk that exempts the gancha, your Jewish own grain, but not a guy's grain, so there's no masra on it. So the question is, let's skip over to chiv of chala. Different topic, different halach. The Mishnah says that a gilgal of a guy is poiter from chala. Who's speaking? Is this connected only to that opinion that exempts the guy's grain from masra, and likewise the guy's dough from chala, or even according to Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who obligate a guy's grain in terms of maser, but when it comes to challah, they will exempt it for a different reason. Let's see. So that's the question. So again, Haman Tanila, who's the author? Who's the one expressing this opinion that the dough of a guy is potter from challah? Divrei HaKoyli, is it universally accepted? Afilu Rav Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, even they, Tikum Achav Yehosam, obligate the grain of a guy in terms of maaser, patri hocha, here they will exempt the dough of a guy from chala. Why? Because when it comes to grain, the Torah specifies the word the gancha and repeats it twice. And Rashi actually says that, it says it three times. One is to exempt hegdish owned grain, and then we have two extra. And the rule is, when we have two exemptions on the same thing, actually it turns into a riboy, expands it. It's basically to say, don't pay attention to that exemption, it's really meant to be expanded and to include even the grain of a guy. There's an extra degoncha, it's an exemption after an exemption. Ein miut achar miut. When that happens, elol rabbis, it turns into a an expansion, even the grain of a guy. So that's regarding Masar of Alachaba. When it comes to Chiv of Chala, it only says, your dough. It only says it twice. The Shita Mukabetis actually switches the Lashon here. He says, the two Arisei Seichems are as follows. So our gear says chad is one as far as sechem to tell you kedei isaschem, the size, the properly sized dough, and the other vachad, the other sechem is coming to exempt the goy and the heglish. But the shita takes out these words. He says your dough. It says it twice. One is to exempt goy and one to exempt heglish. So there's a special indication that the heglish is potter. And the other one is Vlayas Egdish. So that would explain why, even according to them, the Issa of Hegdish is potter, despite the fact that the grain of that's why they would agree that the Issa of a Goy is potter, despite the fact that when it comes to grain, they hold differently. Or you can say that according to Rameh Rabbi Yesi, the loch of the challah by dough would be comparable to the loch of maser by grain. In both cases, it would be chayiv even if owned by a guy. This mishnah that we just quoted, which exempts the guys from challah, that's Rabbi Yesi and Rabbi Shimon. Odim Rabbi Yesi, Rabbi Shimon, they're the ones speaking here. The kapatri, they exempt goy material from maaser, and the same with the challah. Avar Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda. But according to the other shita, just the opposite. Gamri reishis reishis mihasim. They compare the chiv of challah, where it says reishis reishis arisei sechem, the first of your dough, to the chiv of maaser by grain, where it also says reishis. You know, reishis the goncha, and just like over there, the goy doesn't exempt here as well. So we're not sure which way to go. Amar Rava, he expressed his wish that he should be zeichet to see the answer in a dream. Ma yei rabba, should be the will of Hashem, the achse bechilmak should experience his clarity in a dream. There's a whole discussion amongst the achrayim. How could he rely? How would he rely on a dream regarding halacha? Okay. In any case, hadama rabba. So, although he didn't see in a dream, but he gained clarity as follows. He says, I think man de omar, he says it goes hand in hand. The shita that holds that miruach of a goy meaning the chiyuv maser by the goy grain is potter, it's exempt from that. Meruach gecham poiter. So meruach is the finishing touches. It's when you straighten out, you smooth out the pile of grain. It sort of gives it labels it as grain. So the meruach, the completion of the process on the grain of a goy poiter, exempts it from maser. Likewise, the same regarding challah by the dough. Gilgal hoyv gecham poiter. On the other hand, Manda Omar Miruach, Hayav Gicham Eni Poter. We hold that by the grain, it's not Poter. Gilgal Gicham Eni Poter by the Challah as well. So it goes hand in hand. Eisri Rav Papa L'Rav. I have a question to you, says Rav Papa. It goes hand in hand. Listen to this brisa. Hayav Gicham Shefer Shpetach Amar. So a guy experienced a firstborn donkey, and he decided he wants to do a pidyon Petach Amar. So he set aside a sheep to be used as an exchange for the firstborn donkey. Okay, so perhaps even made the exchange, whatever he considered to be a pidyon petach hamar. Fine. V'chala, and or he separates his challah from his dough, which he isn't really obligated to do. What do we do with this material? Do we treat it as holy? Do we treat it as special? No, my dear Maisa Shu Potter. We tell him, listen, nice try, but you're a guy. Your stuff has no meaning. The chalas and echeles, lazarim, and the chala portion of his dough is can be eaten by anybody. It's not kadosh. Ubetachamer goizes ve'ovid boy. And the the Petach Hamor arrangement that he did also has no value. You take it, you use it like any other animal. Geizes, you shear it, you know, it's wool, but you can work with it. Okay. Says the Gemara. We can infer from the Braisa, this is specific to these two instances. Petach Hamor, Chala. Well, let's say regarding Truma. He decided to do Truma from his grain. Ha Truma, say Asur, it would seem that it has validity. You can't just eat his truma, it has to be given to a guy. So what do we see from here? That there's a difference between truma and challah. Take a look at the opinion of this Tana. The Amori says, on the one hand, a guy's grain is not exempt from maser, it has validity. The gilgal oil gicham poiter. But when it comes to the dough, when it comes to the challah status, it's potter. So you see, there's a difference between the two. They don't go hand in hand. But oh, furthermore, Eisvei Rabina, he had a quiet question to Rav. Look at this price. Challahs, well, again, we'll see this difference between challah and maser. Challahs, Oivet Gicham, Baretz, it's an Eretz Yisrael, where the Chiv challah is Menat Torah, it's a right, locally grown you know, material, is Chayiv and Challah, which is Ramasa B'chutz La'aretz. So even if it's an Eretz Yisrael, which is the epitome of Chiv, or if he's outside Eretz Yisrael and he has a Truma that he set aside, which Rashi explains is not really Chayiv Min HaTorah, even if it were Jewish-owned material, at most it's only with Rabbanon. So in these two cases, if a guy separates the Chal in Eretz Yisrael or Truma Chutz La'aretz, we tell him it's a non-starter, it has no value, Medina is a Shu Pot. And therefore, Chalas said the dough can be eaten by anybody, and the Chalas Azar, even a non-Kayan can eat it. Shema said, Damas, this Truma falls into a you know, regular material, no harm is done. Let's infer from here. Suppose he made Truma in Eretz Yisrael, where the Chiv is Menat Torah, Truma of Eretz, Asura, it's forbidden, meaning it belongs to a Kayan. Damas, and if it gets mixed into others, it causes havoc. So we see this difference between Chalas and Truma. Take a look at the opinion of this Tana, which is the Amar who says Miruach Avicham Eini Poiter. The grain of a goy is Chayiv and Maser. Nevertheless, Gilgal Avicham Poiter, but not regarding Chalo. Chalo is Potter. So it doesn't go hand in hand. Chalo is Potter, Truma is Chayiv. Unlike what you're saying, Rava, that it goes hand in hand. Says the Gemara, hold it, Rabbanan. You can say that when these two brises jointly teach us that the grain of a goy is chayiv, it's only with the Rabbanon for concern that people might use this loophole. A yid might use this type of loophole. He might go ahead and take his grain, give it to a goy, and have the goy complete the process of miruach so that it it gets an exemption from Maser. He might use this tax loophole, offshore account. But the Rabbanon Gzeirah Mishum Balikisim, we're concerned about Balikisim, wealthy individuals who have lots of properties and looking for ways out of their ways around of around the Truma and Maser. So technically, Min HaTorah will go like Rabbah. There's no difference. Ari Seichem exempts the dough of a goy from challah. The gancha exempts the grain of a goy from truma and maaser. It's only the rabbanon will be obligated. Yochef filu challah nami. Well, that's your pshat, and the chacham should apply a gzera to challah as well. Why are we exempting the dough of a goy from challah? What if a big bakery, a big manufacturing company, decides to offshore the dough and put it on the guy's name to exempt it from challah? So why don't we apply the same concern there? Well, when it comes to challah, it's much easier to exempt yourself, even in your own kitchen, the comfort of your own home. You don't need to come out to the guy. So really, if anybody wants to exempt themselves, you can do so. So there's no point in making all kinds of gzeiros. We know that it needs to be a minimum of 5/4 of a kav and a bit more. So basically it's 1 1/4 plus. That has to be the size, the minimum size of the dough to be chayv and challah. So really any homemaker can just ensure that his dough is a bit, her dough is a bit less than that shear. So there's really a more convenient, easier, accessible way of exempting yourself. So there's no point in erecting all kinds of barriers to prevent Yidin Truma Nami Efshadava Lik Rabbi Yeshua. Well, you know what? When it comes to Truma, there's also an easy loophole. So you're piling on these Xeris, concerned that a person might try to exempt himself. It's really an easy deal to exempt yourself. If you really want, you can do Rabbi Yeshua's halacha. Rabbi Yeshua. Mara Madam Matavasa, a person could shortchange the system and exempt himself from Truma and Maser by taking the his Tvua. You take it into your house while it's still in the mite and its skin and its shell and its husk, which Rashi explains has a form of ma'achal behema. It's not yet really fit for human consumption. So you're taking it in as though it's animal fodder, and that's what you bring into your home. So it never really entered in its food form, which would trigger the chiv of Truma Masra. So in this case, it would be pata, kadesh te behem teyachelas, to a maser, so you can give it to your animal, it's pata from maser, and even a person could eat it, but only achilas. Right, there's a whole discussion. But in any case, technically, it's pata from maser, if you do it this way. Inami, another solution to bypass the chiv of maser that anybody can do, da'ilo der gagos, der chafifos. Instead of bringing it through your front door, which is a precondition for chiv of maser, it says, v'achlu b'sharecha, you bring it in directly. Bringing them through the rooftop, through the carfif, through the backyard, this storage area. So what's the gain? What's the purpose? What are we accomplishing by making a gzera to preempt any tax loopholes when it comes to truma by giving it to a guy? Anybody can do a system that will exempt him anyways. Like we say by the challah, just make a smaller batter. Well, says the Gemara, Hasam Farhesu. People aren't going to be so keen, so quick to use the Truma loophole, doing it, through the roof and all that. It's something that's going to be publicly seen and known. And Zilu Milsa, it's not becoming. It's not a person which Sterzach would hesitate to do so in public. So using a goy for this would be an easier system. That's why we block him from doing so. When it comes to challah, it's something you do in the privacy of your own home. So you'll ensure that your batter is smaller than the required amount. So it's not something which is embarrassing or shameful, right? It's in private. So if anybody should choose to do so, he can do so and exempt himself from challah. So there's no point in erecting zeros to ensure that they don't use the goy as a cover, because anybody could really exempt himself if he should so choose to do so. Okay, so conclusion. There's no question regarding Hegdash. Gilgul of Hegdash potters from Chalo. Hegdash own grain is potter from Maser. Regarding the Agoy, so according to Rava's approach, it really goes hand in hand. If you hold that the guy is grain as chayv and masher, likewise the guy is dough regarding challah, and vice versa. Okay, says the Mishnah. Back to the offering of the minchas o'emer on the 15th day of on the 16th day of Nisan, right? Machas haShabbos. So we have the isorin, which is asiros ha'efa, right? The required amount of flour, barley flour. And now he's about to process it. He mixes it with oil, bala isorin. So the kohen approaches the isorin. V'nasan lav shamnoi, he adds the oil, v'nasan lavoino, yotzuk abalal, pours the oil in while he's preparing to mix it, a bala, and he mixes it, heinef, a higish, he waves it, he does the truf of a higish, and then he takes the kli with the oimer and he taps it to the corner of the mizbeach, kamatz v'hiktor, he does the kmitza, removes the kmitza, and then burns it on the mizbeach, mashar, and the leftovers are given to the kehanim for consumption, nechal kehanim. Okay, as soon as the oimer was offered, that lights the green light for consuming the new crop, right? As soon as the oimer was offered, suddenly they're offering new, the markets are full of, the stores are full of new material. Yoitzin, they go out and Yoitzin and they discover, Shukei Yerushalayim, the street, the market of Yerushalayim, Shumali Kemach Mikali, it's filled with new, fresh flour and roasted flour. Shalebitzin Chachamim. This was not really in accordance with the wishes of the Chachamim. Divir Meir, according to Rav Meir, Chacham were not happy with this because if it's already available now, apparently it was processed, it was harvested, etc., before the oimer was actually offered, which puts the people handling that material in risk of perhaps sampling from that material, which at that point is still forbidden. So you're not meant to deal with this material until the oimer was offered. Rabbi Doimer, nah, no worries. Bertzoin Chacham Yoyis, the Chacham were pleased with it, it was okay. Rashi says, the like Azar Shama Yoychal, he's not concerned that people inadvertently consume the material a minute before it was mutter. Really? But like Azar, says the more of like Azar, Rabbi Do generally is not concerned that a person handling food material might go ahead and sample from it. For a minute, we have a kasha regarding B'dikas Chametz back in the Maseches Pesachim. Suppose he missed the B'dikas Chametz at night. Rabbi Doimer, Boykin Erla Abba Asa. So, ideally, you should do the B'dika, or the evening, the night of the 14th, meaning the night before Erev Pesach, as we do. If you miss that opportunity, do it in the morning. But the latest is during the sixth hour, what we call, before Chatzos, before the Isser actually kicks in Menatera. That's the deadline. Don't go past that point, because if you're going to be looking for chametz past that point, you might eat it. Which, of course, is Asr. Or Abbasar Shachar, so in the morning, Bishas Sabir, the latest is Bishas Sabir, which Rashi says Bishas Shishis, which is when he's meant to stop burning the chametz. V'chacham Oimer Le'Badak V'chulu, no, they say, look, if you miss that, keep on going, even on Pesach itself. So we have sort of a two-way contradiction here, right? Technically, we have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Ayah says, no worries about processing the new grain. Nobody's going to eat it anyways, until it's mutter. Whereas in Bidkas Chametz, we find that he's concerned that he might eat the chametz if you're handling it. And the Chachamim go the other way. Here they say we're concerned, and there they say they're not concerned. Amar Rabba. Let's first address Rabbi Yehuda. By chametz he's concerned, but not by chadash, the new grain. Shani chadash. Chadash is different. Teshlei tartlei le kituf, because there's a discernible, visible difference in terms of how you harvest it. You see, aside from the issue of eating the new grain, you're also not really allowed to harvest it in a regular fashion, because the omer is meant to be the first harvest. So at most you can do kituf. Manually clip the stalks off the ground. So it's a very abnormal, unusual method, which highlights its status. Tells you, look, it's asra, don't eat it. Zacharus, this way you'll be mindful of the fact that it's asra. That's why it allays any concern of consumption as opposed to chametz, where there's no visible, declaration of any sort. So, amal abaye, tenech ktsira. Okay, that addresses the actual ktsira, the harvesting, because of its abnormal nature. So you see that it's, but after the harvesting, you grind, you sift in a very routine fashion. At that point, what happened to the concern of eating? Tenachsiru. What about Tchina, Varkada, the grinding, the sifting? Michael, remember, how are you going to address that? Halikash, the answer is like this. You do it in an unusual way as well. Tchina, the grinding is done by Rechai the other with a handmill. Not very standard procedure. Harkada, sifting, you do it again, abnormally, al gabi nafa, on the back of the sifter. Okay, so this way he's not going to eat it. What about Beis HaShlochen, the Shari Katsira? What about a poor quality field which needs to be manually watered? It's not the best quality material, which will not supply to the Omer, meaning to say there's a Isra of harvesting from a field that could technically, theoretically supply the Omer material. You can't engage in harvesting in that field before the Omer, but if it's a field that, which in any case wouldn't really supply the Omer material, you can go and harvest even before the Omer is, you know, is offered. The Shari Katsir, where harvesting is mutter in a regular fashion, you don't need to do it in an unusual way. This is not as we learned in the Mishnah Kodesh, Meis HaShalachim Shema Makim. You can cut the grain off this field in the valley. You can't do Gaddish, you can't do piling it. Okay, that's a discussion in the Gemara and Pesachim. In any case, Katsira in a regular fashion is mutter in this case. Michael Amir, so now we're back to the question. What's going to keep him back from eating it inadvertently? So we go back to our original kasha. Here, Rabbi Yehuda is concerned about doing bidikas chametz at a time where you cannot eat the chametz, because you might inadvertently eat the chametz, and by the chadash material, we allow them to prepare in advance of the krevas ha'omer without any concern of consumption. Ella, Amar Abaye, let me tell you the answer. Chadash badu minei. You see, a person is naturally going to avoid chadash, Rashi says, because he's been keeping away from chadash for months and months. He's on that mindset, on that track. He'll know to keep away from it. Chametz, like badu minei, but chametz, a nice, Danish, he's not used to keeping away from that. Right? It suddenly landed on him. Now it's Erev Pesach. So, since he's used to consuming this material throughout the year, it's more difficult to keep away. And he might instinctively reach out and eat it. That's why there's a concern by chametz more than a chadash. Amar Rav, okay. You've now reconciled the contradiction between the two Rabbi Yudas. You keep away from Chadash, but not from Chametz. Fine. Amar Rav, the Rabbi Yudah, Rabbi Yudah Kasha. So you only address the Kasha between two Rabbi Yudas. We remember we had another Kasha as well. On the flip side, the Rabban like Kasha. There's no Kasha between the two Rabbanans. There is. Because here the Rabbanan say, we're not concerned about the fellow eating the Chametz in its forbidden time. And when it comes to Chadash, keep away. Don't handle it until it's mutter. How are you going to address that? The Rabban, that's not a kala kasha. Elam Rava says, Rava, I'll tell you. I'm going to agree to Abaye. To Abaye's solution regarding the two Rabbi Yudas, as we explained. Chadash is different than Chametz. The Rabban, that's also solvable. Like kasha. When it comes to handling forbidden material, there's always that present danger of there's always that concern about inadvertent consumption. But Abay Chametz, Loikash, who atzma mechazer olav l'soifer. Look, what's he engaged in? He's seeking to determine whether he has Chametz in his possession for the purpose of destroying it. So he has that sort of mindset. He's on that destructive mode. He's trying to destroy the chametz. Who asks for mechazer all of a sudden? He's looking to burn the server. Mechal chametz. He's going to sit down and have a meal? Of course not. So that mitigates any concern of inadvertent consumption. Okay, so that's the first approach. Again, we have the stira. Here, Rabbi Yehuda says, don't worry about being involved in processing chadash. You're not going to eat it. And by chametz, he's concerned. And the answer was because chadash is accustomed to keeping away, but chametz is not. The rabban, on the other hand, say don't get involved in material which you shouldn't be eating. But when it comes to chametz, he's in the process of destroying, of obliterating the chametz. Of course, he's not going to eat it. Rav Ashi Amar, let me give you another approach. The Rav Yehuda and the Rav Yehuda Lekasha. Regarding the first question between the two Rav Yehudas, here's the answer. Typically, we are concerned that you might inadvertently reach out to the item that you're dealing with, like by the chametz. But in terms of the grain, kemach kali tanan. The Mishnah says it's kali. Rashi says it's like our flour, which is not really edible. It's been dried in the oven. It's not really edible raw. So there's no real concern of reaching out and eating this material. But the Gemara responds, v'hoda Rav Ashi, this presentation by Rav Ashi Berusahi, it's incorrect. It's Berusa means outside, like bro, it belongs outside. It's not something which we're going to accept. Because Tenach Mikol Ve'elach, that would address the material after it's been roasted. Fine, it's inedible. But Ad Kol Yemei Kalamima, but remember, a lot happens before it's roasted. It's harvested, it's threshed. The concern is present at that point. What about the solution we offered before, because he's manually clipping it off the ground, which makes it different, it makes it discernible. Well, Beis HaShalachin, could the rabba, Beis HaShalachin, the Shari Katsim HaKlamim, what about the those fields where you're allowed to harvest? Because it's not. So, we're not really going to accept this pshat. El Lahod Rav Ashi Berusahi, we're not going to accept this pshat. We're going to go back to the original approach. Okay, so conclusion. We discussed the offering of the Omer. We discussed how, as soon as the Omer was done, there was plenty of supply out in the streets, which was either Bertzayin Chachamim, like Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, because there's no concern about eating the Chadash in advance of the, and according to Rabbi Meir, it was Shlei Bertzayin Chachamim for concern of an inadvertent consumption. We had a stira between here and Chametz, which was resolved. Okay, all the best to you and much, much Hatzlacha.